One of the controversies still swirling from the 2016 election is how much impact outside influence campaigns on social media had on the electorate. There was, of course, the indictment of 13 Russians working for the Internet Research Agency, a so-called troll farm based in St. Petersburg. Then there were the armies of bots, algorithm-controlled social media accounts posing as real people, amplifying all manner of things to create the appearance of popular support, and apparent bids to sway everything from elections to stock prices. Our next guest has been on a bot hunt, and she found them boosting a very esoteric conspiracy theory that has gotten a shockingly large amount of momentum in a short amount of time. April Glazer writes about tech for Slate. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So first off, how do you identify a bot?
So it kind of depends on what platform it's on. So when we're talking about bots, or when I talk about bots, I usually mean some sort of automated activity on social media, right? And a bot, just to give a brief definition, it kind of gives the impression that there's more grassroots support than there is, right? And so, you know, it could be a Twitter account that has some level of automation behind it. It doesn't have to be completely automated. And that account usually will tweet, you know, more than 50 times a day about a particular subject, or about 50 times a day, and usually very, very divisive content. Often that bot will tweet, like, you know, 10, 12 times an hour, more than like most humans can, with like a picture embedded and a bunch of, you know, strange hashtags. But sometimes, and increasingly, it's getting more subtle and it looks more like, you know, human-like activity, and the language is starting to look more natural, and it's clear that they're programming them in more nuanced ways. We can also see some level of automation on Facebook accounts sometimes, although that's a bit harder, and usually those accounts are more puppeted than bots.
Twitter. What's the distinction between puppeting and bots?
So when I say a puppet, I mean that there's actually a person there operating the account, right? Right.
And just not the person the count purports to represent.
Yes, right. And so we saw this a lot leading up to the 2016 election, particularly from the Internet Research Agency, which is the kind of troll operation that was run out of St. Petersburg that's backed by the Kremlin, that had, you know, thousands of accounts across Twitter and Facebook and Pinterest and Instagram and even Pokemon Go, and, you know, where they were really trying to give the impression that they were parts of, or even running whole activist campaigns across the United States, you know, hosting events. And those accounts actually had people behind them. They weren't real. They were kind of doing an espionage operation into American kind of democratic and activist works.
And basically what you're describing is like a factory for social media influence, rows and rows of people sitting next to each other running social accounts.
Yes, yes. We're talking about like a whole building dedicated to social media output, and not just in the United States where they're trying to influence elections, but in Ukraine as well, you know, in Russia as well. You know, there was not a lot of activity shown in the, you know, to be proven from Russia in the Mexican elections that just occurred. But you know, elections across the world. But there was certainly a concentrated effort in the United States. We know Brexit, for example, had a level of Russian propaganda activity.
So I just want to, not to put too fine a point in the distinction, but if a puppet is a person and a bot is an algorithm, is the distinction that useful? Somebody's programming the algorithm. Someone's telling the bots what to do.
The distinction is useful because they're harder to detect if a person is doing it, mm-hmm. right? And when you have a level of automation at play, particularly on Twitter, where our president really likes to use the platform to do all kinds of like geopolitical work, then it could look like, you know, thousands and thousands of people are retweeting or talking or responding to this, to his tweet, or to, you know, any other of his surrogates on Twitter. And it may really make it look like there's more support for a particular idea or opinion than there actually is. To give a brief example, in the third presidential debate in 2016 in October, there were about seven times more bots on Twitter tweeting about Trump than there were about Clinton. In general, across the world, we see bots take more extreme right stances.
Right. So a simple algorithm would be like, take any tweet fired off by Trump or this list of 10 of his prominent supporters, retweet it, and append a comment that says, "Make America great again."
Something like that, yeah. It could have, it could be about George Soros. That was a big topic, of course, for the Russian bots leading up to the 2016 election. And it will have a picture with a really strange meme attached to it. Often these puppet accounts, or these bot accounts, will have a photo of someone that they maybe you know, bought from some black market of social media accounts. You know, it's very easy, actually, to if you dig around enough, to buy thousands of Twitter accounts and fire them up when you want. And often we see these bots, you know, active at some point and not active at another point. So I see, you know, bots active during a like when a certain conspiracy theory is starting to boil over, bots will get active, and then the bots that kind of started circulating the conspiracy theory, you know, won't as it gets more popular. People kind of recycle the use of these automated accounts so as to really kind of cover up their tracks.
Move on to other topics. Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to another topic. You were specifically, in your most recent article on this topic, digging into how bots are spreading an esoteric right-wing conspiracy theory called QAnon. I don't want to get lost in the weeds because it seems to be all weeds in the world of QAnon, but what is the like 1 minute version of what they're spreading?
Sure. QAnon conspiracy theory is a conspiracy theory that came up in the kind of cobwebby corners of 4chan, which is this kind of very, very far extreme right message board where a lot of memes are hatched and a lot of kind of trolls decide and what to do and how to harass people often. QAnon conspiracy theory believes that Trump is actually winning or that, you know, he has more supporters than he doesn't, that Mueller is working on behalf of Trump secretly to investigate a pedophile ring within the Democratic Party, and that eventually Trump is going to have a huge wave where he fires all of the global elites throughout the United States government and takes it over. They believe, for example, that John McCain had committed suicide, that Huma Abedin, the top Clinton aide, is wearing an ankle bracelet or like an ankle monitor, that there's all kinds of pedophilia at play in the Democratic Party. The list goes on, and really none of it is substantiated by evidence, but Q is dropping breadcrumbs, is what he calls it, or she or they or it, that on 4chan, that are these clues that help people kind of follow the conspiracy theory along, and new clues are dropped, you know, every day.
Okay, so I get why someone with the resources to control the BART army would want to influence an election or maybe pump up the price of a cryptocurrency that they hold. What incentive would any actor with resources have for boosting right-wing Trump supporter wish fulfillment magical thinking for boosting the theory that Mueller is actually working for Trump to expose a pedophile ring?
It's a great question, and you know, it's a difficult one to answer. It's one that we could only kind of try to answer, but I think increasingly what I'm seeing is, you know, Trump supporters will support Trump no matter what, and as the president continues to be kind of mired in his own self-made controversies, it becomes more and more difficult to kind of rationalize, you know, that this person is right and good for the country, and so people are actually moving towards kind of magical thinking or moving towards kind of thinking of Trump as kind of a savior or someone that is doing something much larger than we can understand in order to support him. And people, I think, also don't trust mainstream media at all in any way. And so they're looking for other means in which to understand what's going on in the world and still uphold their particular political agenda.
I mean, couldn't the causality be reversed? I mean, maybe whoever's running the bots is like, I got to get my bots some followers. Hey, this QAnon stuff seems like it's really popular with people who are gullible. If I just start retweeting the hell out of it, you know, maybe suddenly my accounts will have a following.
Well, that's certainly something that's been reported in terms of Q merchandise is a big business. So, you know, at the Wilkes-Barre Trump rally in Pennsylvania last week, there were more people seen wearing Q shirts than there were people seen wearing shirts for the gubernatorial and Senate candidates in Pennsylvania. So people are buying Q merchandise. These YouTube videos are getting hundreds of thousands of views. That's monetizing it. And it was reported in NBC News last month that at least some people who were responsible for bringing Q out of, you know, the strange corner of 4chan where these weird riddles were being posted that really don't make any sense at all, were brought to YouTube by a couple of moderators from 4chan and one YouTuber who decided to make a video together. And it's unclear if they were able to monetize this in any way, but they started Reddit threads and YouTube threads. So we know there were at least three people.
We're speaking to April Glazer. She writes about tech for Slate. She's just got an article out that is digging into the automated accounts or bot accounts on social media that have been involved in amplifying and spreading the latest and most esoteric right-wing conspiracy theory, QAnon. So April, the tech platforms took a really big black eye after the 2016 election over fake news, over the work of bot networks to run influence campaigns, obviously over the fact that many of these accounts were being run out of a Russian troll farm. What are the tech platforms doing about bots now? Like, does Twitter have a bot-hunting crew?
They are taking all kinds of technical measures to limit automation. So they should be instituting some sort of rate limit this month that might have actually happened earlier this week.
Like a limit on how many tweets per day?
Yeah, right. And making it harder to use the API, which allows you to kind of program. The API is kind of allows you to program Twitter using automation or to write software over Twitter so you don't have to be there push and go each time you send a tweet. They've made it, you know, more vetting processes with that. Facebook is being much faster about reporting when they find something and, of course, are looking more diligently. Last month we found out that there was an Iranian kind of social media operation that was also pretending to be, you know, American news sites in order to kind of forward an Iranian agenda, information about the nuclear deal and what have you. Or it's rather information about Iranians' nuclear power. And Facebook reported that they found these, you know, 600-plus accounts pretty quickly after they found them, like within weeks or a month after they found them, compared to what happened, you know, when they first had an inkling that there was some sort of, like, Russian manipulation happening around the 2016 election. It took them really over a year to come out publicly and say, you know, this is what we found.
Right. I mean... But then the issue with the crackdown by social media is, like, it's not like the people running the bots are completely idle while this is happening. If Twitter has a new rule that you can't send more than 1,000 tweets per day, then whoever's running the bot network says, well, I'll just get 10 times as many accounts sending 100 tweets a day.
Exactly. And it's a real game of cat and mouse, and it's probably almost impossible. And that's really one of the things that's so difficult about managing these social media platforms is that you post in real time. So any cleanup you do is after it's already out there. And so, you know, with as fast as the news is moving and as fast as things boil over now, when news breaks, it's that moment when those bots are fired up or when those puppet accounts really get going that they help to amplify a certain strain of the news. And by the time they're taken down, usually a lot of the damage is already done.
So Facebook's had a longstanding policy that people on the platform have to use their real identities. Twitter never has. It's one of the operative distinctions between the two platforms. How much does that complicate Twitter's efforts to rein this type of activity in?
Tremendously. I think it's very, very difficult to know when something is or isn't a bot. It's not every bot or automated account or semi-automated account where, let's say, that it's automated for, you know, half the day and then someone picks it up again later and starts, you know, tweeting more organically, to know that who it is behind there, especially if the bot is run by somebody that is good at checking their email. It's incredibly difficult. You have to really look at a constellation of things. With Facebook, they have all sorts of, like, real name policies and verification procedures. But even so, people create puppet accounts on Facebook all the time. So not necessarily bots as much, but accounts pretending to be someone else. We did see a lot of Russian fake accounts on Facebook where they had borrowed some random picture from the internet or maybe one that they had purchased and given people whole lives and personalities that were, you know, organizing rallies and what have you.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure that all the scantily clad strangers who friend me on Facebook and then proposition me are totally authentic identities.
So those, it's easy to, I think, spot some things that are, like, redundant like that. But the ones that are really harmful are the ones that are hardest to spot. And they're the ones that really make it look like certain extreme far-right ideas, and generally it's the far right again we're seeing this automated activity behind. Without a doubt, the Russian interference campaign on social media was aiming to boost Trump and hurt Clinton. we're seeing this activity on Facebook too, and it's just incredibly hard to find.
April Glaser, are the tech companies taking it seriously now, or are they just kind of performing concern about it? Is there more that they could be doing?
There's always more that they could be doing. I mean, again, we're talking about some of the most powerful companies in the world. You know, Twitter is not as powerful as Facebook. They are not as wealthy as Facebook. But Facebook is in the top five, you know, most wealthy and valuable companies in the world. And Google and YouTube, where we also see a lot of automated activity or at least people commenting that that are not authentic using YouTube. It's certainly something that they could do more. We've seen a lot of the action that they've done a result of public pressure. There's really been a referendum in the press about this because it's, you know, at least in terms of the Russian influence campaign, one of the largest in world history, it seems, when we talk about in terms of trying to infiltrate or disseminate propaganda in another country's election. But Congress has questioned Facebook about this repeatedly, and Twitter. Most recently, Jack Dorsey spoke in front of Congress on these issues. And, it seems that everything they're doing is a result of people pressuring them to do so. I mean, it's hard to forget that after the 2016 elections, Mark Zuckerberg did say that he did not believe that fake news or that Facebook really had much of a sway on the elections. And we keep learning more and more about just how powerful it was and how amplified it was on his platform.
So let's circle back to the opening example here, like the QAnon conspiracy theory, not necessarily hatched by bots, according to your reporting, definitely amplified by bots. How big a difference did they make?
It's hard to say. I mean, so this is a really strange theory. And so when, you know, we started reading about this and hearing more about it, it's very hard to question, like, how did this get so popular, right? How did the Facebook group swell to 23,000 people? Why are there people on TV wearing Q shirts? Like, this is such a bizarre theory. The bots, I do think, really make it look like it's more popular than it is. And that really justifies the people who do believe in it to keep going. And they might retweet them, or the bots might like their tweets. And, you know, when somebody likes something you did on social media, you feel good about yourself. That's one of the reasons why social media is addictive.
It triggers a dopamine release.
It does. And it makes people feel like they're on the right track to something. So, you know, bots, as I said from the outset, really give the false impression of a groundswell of grassroots support. It makes something appear more popular than it is. And it can kind of help other people to say, oh, wow, there's a lot of people following this, or there's people who are really dedicated to tracking down these cues or clues. Maybe I should jump on board and try to find some, too.
So, in other words, fake popularity leads to actual popularity.
On social media, yes, because social media has this kind of flattening effect, right, where we see a New York Times article in this exact same format as somebody boosting this super bizarre conspiracy theory about a pedophile ring out of a DC pizzeria, you know, in the same breath that we see an announcement for our grandmother's birthday. And people, I think, are also starting to get confused about what they see on social media because everything starts to look the same and it's hard to know what is and isn't important.
April Glaser, that's all the time we have. Thanks for the reporting. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
April Glaser writes about tech for Slate.